Taser's inner is Robert Beretti. Robert Beretti is an advisory software engineer with WebSphere Application Server, Level 2 support in RTP, North Carolina. He has over 10 years of customer support experience, which includes 7 years supporting the IBM HTTP server, SSL, and the WebSphere HTTP plugin component. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Robert.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's session, session number 3. I hope you were able to attend sessions 1 and 2, but those are will be replayed on the web for your convenience. So welcome to session 3. Today we're going to talk about debugging, and just to let you know up front, the purpose of this presentation, at least from my perspective, is I wanted to create a presentation more of a resource that you can often look back at or look to when you're debugging and troubleshooting SSL problems. There are a lot of links in here that I use on a regular basis when I debug problems, as well as the methodology on how I approach things. So the PDF file that's available, if you bookmark that, I highly recommend that you reference it periodically and frequently, if you will. When you have SSL problems, it's a really good resource, and that is the purpose of putting this presentation together today. I wanted to provide that sort of resource for you. But anyway, if we could continue on to the first slide, or slide 2, I should say. Today's agenda, what we're going to cover, we're going to explore how to troubleshoot and debug SSL configuration and handshake problems within the IBM HTTP server. We're going to specifically learn how to enable SSL HTTP plugin and just get tracing, which is very important whenever you're dealing with SSL-related problems within the HTTP server. We're also going to learn how to log SSL-related information in the web server's access log. A lot of folks are not aware that can be done, but it is a good resource and technique for determining certain things about requests, et cetera, when it comes to SSL. So we will talk about that. Let's go ahead and proceed to slide number 3. To continue on with today's agenda, we'll analyze SSL messages in the web server's error log, as well as analyze SSL messages in the HTTP plugin log. Identify the certificate passed by the web server to the browser. A lot of times when a certificate is passed, we're not sure exactly what cert's passed, and so we want to be able to identify that from the browser perspective. So there's a couple quick ways to do that. We also are going to learn how to bypass the HTTP plugin and hit the WebSphere application server directly to identify the certificate passed by WebSphere. And again, whenever you're dealing with problems with the handshake between the plugin and the application server, you may see some error messages in the plugin log and need to identify what certificate was actually passed, and the plugin doesn't tell you that. So you want to bypass the plugin to actually hit the web for your application server directly to actually see what certificate was passed, and we will talk. I'll show you how to do that. Okay, so let's proceed on to slide number 4. First things first, whenever you're dealing with SSL problems within the HTTP server, it's very important that you make sure that you're running the minimum global security kit that is supported for the version. If you're not, then you definitely need to make sure that you install the proper GIST kit to get it up to the current minimum supported version. Very important whenever you're dealing with SSL problems. The second thing is, you know, what files are needed to troubleshoot and debug SSL in the IBM HTTP server. There are specific files to look at, and we're going to talk about or list them out so that you'll have so that you'll know all the files that you should concentrate on whenever you're dealing with SSL problems. Okay, so let's continue on to slide number 5. What are the minimum global security kit supported versions? Well, if you're running IBM HTTP Server 2.0.47, the global security kit version that is installed is global security kit version 7. So if you happen to have a 2047 server running, and you do not have Gisket 7 installed, maybe it accidentally didn't get installed, or you had Gisket 5 or Gisket 4 installed, that would not work properly. You have to have Gisket 7, and at a minimum, you have to have either 7.0.1.10 or higher, or 7.0.1.16 or higher, depending on whether it's 2.47.0 or 2.0.47.1. For 6.0 and 6.1, again, those both use Global Security Kit version 7. They do not use Global Security Kit version 4 or 5. They definitely use version 7, and you must be at these minimum versions to be supported, 7.0.3.6 or higher, or 7.0.3.20 or higher. So definitely keep that in mind if you're running any other versions lower than what's listed here. For one, the product wouldn't be supported, but not only that, there's no guarantee that SSL would work properly. So let's go ahead and proceed to slide number 6. What files are needed to troubleshoot and debug SSL problems within the HTTP server? I've tried here to include a complete list for configuration problems within the HTTP server. You would look at the httpd.conf, which is the main configuration file for the web server. If you're dealing with SSL handshake errors, what type of initialization errors, configuration errors, etc., those would all be recorded in the error_.log. For a Unix system, for a Windows system, it's error.log. And any errors that are recorded during an SSL handshake, if there's a configuration error on startup, initialization problems with SSL, etc., those will all be recorded in the error_.log. For all requests that are handled by the web server, all gets, posts, etc., if there's error codes associated with those, like a 500, possibly a 403 forbidden, etc., those will all be recorded in the access_.log. So it's very important that you look at that file. As far as certificate problems, if you're dealing with a key database issue, problems with a particular certificate, the files to focus on for that is the key.kdb, which is the main container that holds your certificates. As indicated in session 1, I did want to mention that the key.kdb is not a certificate. Don't get confused. Some people think that it is. It's not. It's just a container to hold certificates. The key.sth file is the password file that holds the encrypted password used by the web server to gain access to the key.kdb. So that's a file that you will need to look at depending on the problem that you're dealing with. The key.rdb is the request database. Whenever you create a certificate request, the request is actually stored in that database file. So that's another important file. The key.crl is the certificate revocation list. That contains any certificates that have been revoked or expired will be stored in that particular file. There's a gisgettrace.log. That file is actually created when you enable Gisket tracing. It is not there by default. And we'll talk about how to enable Gisket tracing further on, but when you do enable it, that file will be created. So important to note that. For particular certificate problems themselves, actual problem with the certificate, you might have it might be called servercert.cer, ca.cer, et cetera. CRT.crt might be another extension for certificates. So you will want to go ahead and make sure that you look at those files. If you're dealing with an actual problem with your certificate itself. If you're dealing with LDAP, problems with SSL communication from the IBM HTTP server to an LDAP server, where you actually have configured LDAP in the IBM HTTP server, and you're having problems with the SSL handshake between the LDAP server, between the web server and the LDAP server, there's an LDAP trace.log that will be created if you enable LDAP tracing, and as well as the configuration file that the web server uses to communicate to an LDAP server is the LDAP.prop, so another important file. If you're dealing with problems with the plugin communicating, over SSL, the two main files that you want to focus on is the plugin cfg.xml, which is the main configuration file for the plugin, as well as the http://plugin.log, which is the plugin log file where any error messages will be recorded during the actual handshake. And then the plugin-key.kdb and the plugin-key.sth. The plugin-key.kdb is the container. Again, it's not a certificate. It is just a container that holds certificates. By default, it's designed to hold signer certificates so that when a personal server certificate is passed from WebSphere to the plugin can validate the issuer of that cert by comparing it to the list of signers it has stored in the plugin-key.kdb. So if there are problems with the certificate being passed to WebSphere, that is a file that you need to look at to make sure that the issuer of that certificate, that their root signer cert as well as any chain certs are actually stored in that file. And then the plugin-key.sth is the actual password file that's used by the plugin to gain access to the key.kdb in order to pull and check certificates. Okay, so those are all the files that you need whenever you're debugging SSL-related problems. The only one other file I didn't include here is a packet trace. You know, it's hard to actually see data in a packet trace when it's encrypted. Wireshark does have some features in it where you can, as an admin, you can actually use Wireshark and point to your key files and actually decrypt the packets. Don't have a lot of experience with that, but it is something that is available from Wireshark. Okay, so with that, let's move on to slide number 7. Okay, let's proceed to slide number 7. And we'll just wait for that slide to, there we go. Okay, thank you. Okay, so now next let's get busy. Again, as the previous sessions, I try to put things in a question-answer type of format because as technical folks, we usually ask ourselves questions when we're debugging, like how do I do this or what do I need to check first, et cetera. So again, this presentation is laid out in a question-answer type of setting. So what should I immediately check first? If you're having an SSL problem, what is it that you want to check first? What tracing is useful to debug SSL problems? And we'll cover that. What information can I log in the access log that can help me to troubleshoot SSL? What does a particular SSL message in the web server's error log mean? What does a particular SSL message in the HTTP plugin log mean? And how do I confirm what certificate is being used? And we're going to go ahead and address all of these questions in the next upcoming slides. So let's proceed on to slide number 8. Okay, so what should I immediately check first? Whenever you're having an SSL problem with the HTTP server, the very first thing, and it almost seems somewhat simple, but you'll be surprised that sometimes if SSL is not working, maybe it's possible that the web server isn't listening on the port. Maybe the web server failed to start. A silly thing to say, but maybe the web server was never, the service was never actually started to begin with. So it's not that you tried to start and it didn't start, but actually maybe it's just not started. So the first thing you want to check is to make sure that the web server is actually listening on the port, 443 in this case, by doing a netstat space minus NA. When you do that, there's an example here of the output that you'll see. In this particular case, you'll see that in the example that 9.27.165.141 is the IP address of my web server, and it's listening on port 443. If you don't see a statement similar to this for the port, then you can be pretty confident that the web server is not listening on the port, and therefore SSL certainly will not work. So that's the very first thing you want to check. And the statement or the port that the server is listening on is going to be determined by the listen directive that you specified in the httpd.com. And we did cover that in the configuration portion of the presentation in session 2 on what directive you need. It would be listen space, the IP address, colon, and port. So anyhow, so let's move on to slide number 9. Okay, so then the next thing you want to check is you want to try both HTTPS, the host name, as well as HTTPS, the IP address. The reason for that is SSL is an IP-based protocol, and so if you're trying the host name and the handshake fails or you get a page can't be displayed on a browser, that doesn't mean that the actual SSL within the web server configuration is incorrect. It's possible that the web server's SSL configuration is fine, that the web server is listening on the port properly, and that the web server is able to handle traffic on the specific IP address that is configured. But in fact, if you try the host name and it fails, it's possible that it just may be a DNS issue. So that's why you also want to try and use the IP address that you have defined for the website. And if the IP address fails, one thing to keep in mind is if you're trying this from an external environment, like the, you know, you're trying this from the internet as opposed to the intranet, obviously the IP address that you want to use is the external IP address that you have configured for the site name, and see if you can get in. If that fails, what I would recommend is you bring up a browser internally in the intranet and try the internal IP address for the web server that you have defined. Again, the IP address that you would want to use internally is the IP address you have defined via the listen directive in your httpd.com for that website. So you definitely want to check that. And that'll help narrow down where the focus is. If the host name doesn't work, then it may just be a DNS issue. If the IP address doesn't work, if you're trying from the using the external IP address, make sure you try the internal IP address internally. If that still fails, then more than likely you really do have either a configuration problem with the web server or possibly some other internal routing issues. So just a kind of a way to narrow down your focus when debugging SSL. The next thing you want to check immediately whenever you have SSL problems is you want to open up the error log and see if there are any initialization errors. If you try to start the web server and the web server is actually listening on the port 443 and you've confirmed that by issuing a netstat and you still can't serve SSL, you may want to check the error log, because if you see initialization errors, they usually occur on startup when you actually start the web server. And any initialization error would indicate that SSL did not even initialize. And most of the time it's due to a configuration problem. And so just keep that in mind, the first thing you want to check after checking the other two things. Next is you want to check the IBM HTTP server version as well as the JISCIT version to confirm that the proper JISCIT version is actually installed. And we already talked about that previously. On what, you know, supported version, what the minimum supported versions are for JISCIT, depending on the actual web server version you have. Definitely something you want to check. So let's proceed on to the next slide, slide number 10. Okay, so to check the IBM HTTP server version, if you're running a Windows environment, you simply go to the IHS root directory, wherever you have IHS installed. You would go to the bin directory and simply type Apache space minus capital V, and that will actually show you what IHS version you have installed. For a Unix environment, again, you would go to the directory where IHS is installed, go to the bin directory and type Apache ctl space minus capital V. Again, that will tell you the actual version of the web server you have installed. In the example here, 6.0.2.15. Okay, so once you know what the web server version is that you have installed, you want to check and make sure that you have the proper JISCIT installed. Let's proceed on to slide number 11. Okay, so to check the JISCIT version, again, you would go to the JISCIT directory where the JISCIT was installed. And we did cover that in the previous session on the actual installation path on where JISCIT does get installed. But once you're in that path, you would go to the bin directory and type gsk7ver.exe, For Unix, it would be GSK7BER. And that will actually dump out quite a bit of information. But what you want to look at is in any one of the blocks of information that's populated, you'll see where it says file version, and you'll see the build number, in this case 7.0.3.20. And you can compare that version to the minimum supported versions that we talked about earlier. And if you're, again, if you're not running a supported version, you definitely want to upgrade Jiskit before you continue further. So with that, let's proceed on to slide number 12. Okay, so another thing to check right away is whether non-SSL requests can be served from the web server. It's possible that if you're, testing SSL and SSL is not working, is it really an SSL problem, or is it that it's a global problem with the web server? Maybe it's non-SSL is not working as well. So you definitely want to check whether or not it's isolated to just SSL or non-SSL as well. And I'm sure we all know how to do that, whether we type HTTPS in the browser versus HTTP. So just another quick thing to check. Another thing is you want to comment out the WebSphere HTTP plugin lines. Specifically, if you're trying to request a dynamic content within WebSphere over SSL and it fails, for example, let's say you're trying to get to WPS/portal over SSL and that fails from the browser. Well, again, as we talked about in the previous session, there's two separate handshakes. There's the handshake between the browser and the web server. That's the first handshake that takes place, and the configuration of SSL there is performed within the httpd.com file. Then you have the second handshake, which is between the plugin and the application server. In that case, the plugin is a client, similar to a browser, and the application server, in this case, would be similar to a web server, where the application server passes a server certificate to the plugin. So if any one of those two handshakes fail, then your dynamic request for HTTPS is going to fail on the browser. But just from looking at the browser side, you're not going to know whether or not it was the handshake that failed between the client and the web server, or was it the handshake between the plugin and the app server that failed. So the quick thing you want to do is comment out the plugin and make sure that you can serve any static pages from the web server. Typically, if you have your web server set up with a document root, the default is en_us, and in there is the index.html, which is the web server's homepage. You could try to request that page over HTTPS. Or if you have a different document root, or you know of a specific index.html that you have on that web server, you could try to get to that over HTTPS. If that is successful, then that confirms one thing. That confirms that the SSL handshake between the client and the web server was successful. And therefore, your configuration within the web server more than likely is correct, and that the root problem that you're having is between the handshake, is the handshake between the plugin and the application server, which is the second handshake. So it's a quick way to immediately narrow down the problem on where to focus by commenting out the plugin and see if you can get to a static page. If you can't get to a static page, then obviously there's a problem with the first handshake, which is between the client and the web server, and in that case you would want to immediately start to debug or look at the httpd.com file. Proceeding on, the next thing you want to check is the actual SSL configuration, and it looks like we jumped to the next slide prematurely, but that's okay. We'll talk about slide 12 in just a minute. But from slide number 11, the thing you want to check is the actual web server configuration file. Most problems, and I've been debugging SSL now for over 7 years, and I can tell you that the majority of problems that you will encounter when dealing with SSL is the configuration. So it's very important that you check your web server configuration to make sure that it is correct. And we did talk about the configuring of the web server in session two, and you can go back and refer to that for identifying a proper configuration. But definitely check the configuration in the httpd.com. So anyway, let's proceed on to slide number 13. Okay, so again, when in doubt, you want to check the configuration of the web server. And here's a link that we refer to often in Level 2 support. It's actually a document that I wrote several years ago, and it's called The Guide to Properly Setting Up SSL Within the IBM HTTP Server. In this document, there's a lot of examples on properly configuring SSL, as well as the steps for configuring SSL. You know, step by, especially a good guide that you can refer to often to check the configuration. So with that, I will proceed on to slide number 14. Okay, so what tracing is useful to debug SSL? We talked about what files are needed. We talked about the what to check first when there's SSL problems. And next, we want to talk about tracing. What tracing is useful to debug SSL problems? Well, there are two main traces which are useful when debugging the IBM HTTP server. The first one is a simple directive. It's called SSL trace. You can simply set that directive in your httpd.com file. A good place to put it is actually at the bottom of the file. And you would want to change the log level as well in the httpd.com to debug whenever you add that directive. And what is that directive used for? What it's used for is it provides additional information in the web server's error log during the read and write of data between the client and the web server. It doesn't record any information about the reads and writes between the plugin and the app server. This is strictly information about the reading and writing of bytes between the actual client browser and the web server. So very, very good information to have. This information will not appear in the error log unless you have actually added SSL trace in there. And if there are any errors when reading or writing data bytes, you'll actually see where it says ERR in this example, there'll actually be a number, and that would be the number of errors. You'll actually see the number of bytes that were written, read or written. And the number there, where the example here is where you see 9392D8, that's actually the thread. So whenever you're looking at these trace lines within the error.log, you want to make sure that you're focusing on one thread, and you can parse that out based on the thread ID. It also records the date and time that the data was actually written. Usually, if you're dealing with read and write problems, you would probably want to go forward with a packet trace and make sure that there are no problems with the network as far as reading and writing of data. The other thing you'd want to check is your handshake to make sure there's no handshake failures, check the configuration, etc. So anyway, so let's proceed on to slide number 15. Okay, so the next tracing that you want to focus on is JISCET tracing. Very important for Windows. In order to enable JISCET tracing, you would create a system variable called GSK_trace_file. You would set the value to the actual log that you want to create, in this case, gsktrace.log. And if we could proceed on to the next slide, slide number 16. Okay, so here is an example on a Windows environment of what the system variable will look like. Very simple to do. To get to environment variables, for those that aren't familiar with it, you would right-click on your My Computer icon. You would click on Properties. And then under Properties, there is a Variables tab. And then there you click on that, and you can actually set these variables. And the variable name in this case is GSK_trace_file. And the path is C, you know, temp, GSK trace. You can change it to any path you want, but this is just an example. So let's proceed on to slide number 17. Okay, so for Unix environments, it's a little different. The environment variable is still the same, but the way to set it is different. It would be, if you're using a ESH, you could do a set env to set it, or if you're using a K-shell, you can do an export command to actually set the environment variable to record the trace. And just to let you know that the actual GSK trace will not be created until you restart the web server. So you would actually set the environment variable and then restart the HTTP server and duplicate your SSL failure, and it'll actually generate this log. Proceed on to slide number 18. Okay, let me just make a quick point about GSK tracing. And this is one of the, I want to say the downside when it comes to GSK tracing. It's definitely something that's needed when you're debugging SSL problems. Unfortunately, because of the GSK underlying API code that's involved, it's not a file that can be reviewed by a customer or even by level two. Normally when we get GSK traces, we send those up to GSK development and they review those. And it has to do with security, their specific SSL APIs, et cetera, that they don't want to expose. But definitely if you are having SSL problems, you check the configuration, you check the, you know, you check netstat, you check the configuration and you look at the error messages in the error log. You know, you've enabled SSL trace and there doesn't seem to be any read or write problems, and you basically don't know how to solve the issue. And, you know, you definitely would want to proceed then and get a GSK trace provided to IBM support so that we can then send it off to IBM development to debug further. Okay, so in addition to SSL trace and GSK tracing, if you're dealing with LDAP, if you're having an LDAP problem with SSL, then you want to go ahead and enable the SSL tracing, the LDAP tracing for SSL. In this case, the environment variable is LDAP underscore trace underscore file, as well as an additional system environment variable, which is LDAP underscore debug. You would set it with a value of 65535. Don't know where that number came from, but that is a number that development asks us to use. So proceed on to slide number 19. Okay, again, here's an example of what it would look like on a Windows environment. You see the SSL, the LDAP underscore trace underscore file, as well as the LDAP underscore debug environment variables. Okay, so let's proceed on to slide number 20. Okay, so for Unix, again, same environment variables, but you would use set env if it's a C shell and export if it's a K shell. Proceed on to slide number 21. Okay, so if the SSL problem involves the IBM WebSphere HTTP plugin, you would want to make sure that you enable tracing in the actual plugin CFG.xml. As indicated earlier, the plugin CFG.xml is the configuration file for the plugin. And so to enable tracing there, you would actually set the log level to trace. And there's an example here showing what the syntax would look like, as well as the path to the HTTP plugin log file. Okay, so let's proceed on to slide number 22. Okay, so if you're dealing with certificate problems, problems trying to generate a KDB file, trying to bring up the IBM Key Management utility, if you have problems with that, what you would want to do is make sure that you set your Java Home. By default, the Java Home should be set when you run the GSK script files that we talked about earlier in the previous session. But if for whatever reason, you know, the tool still is not able to come up, then you can manually set the Java Homes to these specific paths. Because Java does get installed with the IBM HTTP server, and that is the Java we want to use for using the IBM key management utility, so you can manually set the Java home to point to those Java directories. Okay, so proceed on to slide number 23. Okay, once you've set the Java home environment variable, you can then try to start the IBM key management utility from the command line using the following trace string. That'll actually generate an ikeyman.txt file that has all sorts of Java debugging information as well as ikeyman-specific trace strings. Okay, so proceed on to slide number 24. Okay, so for step-by-step instructions on enabling the various traces mentioned in the previous slides, I've provided a link here for your reference on where you can actually find step-by-step instructions on enabling these specific traces that we talked about. For IBM SSL server handshake and configuration problems, you would go to this link. For errors using IKEYMAN with the IBM HTTP server, you can refer to the following link here. Slide number 25. Okay, if you're having problems with LDAP authentication over SSL, then you can refer to this specific document. And if you're having problems specifically with a KDB or a certificate problem, you can refer to this link here for step-by-step instructions on how to enable the tracings that are needed. Slide number 26. Okay, so what information can I log in the access log that can help me troubleshoot SSL? This is information that a lot of folks are not aware of, but it is available, and I recommend using it whenever you try to debug problems on your own, because the information can tell you quite a bit. There are specific SSL environment variables that you can specify using the log format directive in the httpd.com file. Any of the SSL environment variables can be logged for each client request in the web server's access log. And that's the great thing about these environment variables. You can actually specify or record specific information for every single request that comes into the web server. Every single get, every single post, et cetera. So in the next slide, we'll actually see an example of that. Slide number 27. Oh, I'm sorry, it'll be slide number 28, but let's stay on slide number 27 for right now. This information can be very useful when trying to determine what cipher was used for a particular request. Very important. A lot of customers, when you're debugging SSL or let's say you've configured your web server to say, okay, I want to limit this web server using SSL cipher spec directives to only allow encryption using this specific cipher. And I want to prove that cipher was actually used for every single client request that came into this system. Well, you can log that in the access log. So it's great to do that, and I'll show you how to do that in the next coming slides, but great information there. You can also, for every single request that comes into the web server, every get, every single post, you can know immediately whether or not that request was actually an SSL request or a non-SSL request. So again, great information that you can log in your access log. You can determine if you had client authentication enabled. You can actually record the client certificate that was passed. Great for banking institutions that want to actually see for every single request that's issued and received by the web server, we want to know what client actually made that request. So you can actually log that in the access log, as well as what server certificate was used for a specific client request. So you could see if you have multiple websites that are enabled on the server, you're using multiple server certificates, you can actually record the server certificate that was passed back to the client for every single request. Again, very useful information. So let's proceed on to slide number 28. Okay, so here is a quick example. The slide looks like it's a little jumbled, In the PDF file, you won't see it jumbled so much. But an example would be in your httpd.com, you would set your log format using the various SSL variables that we provide. In particular, if you wanted to log whether or not the request came in over HTTPS or over HTTP, the environment variable to use would be percent bracket HTTPS E. And an example of that is below. And it'll actually say on. You'll actually see the word on recorded in the access log for each request if the request was actually handled over SSL. If you want to record the actual cipher that was used, again, very useful. Here's an example of what it would look like in the access log, as well as the if you wanted to log the actual client certificate that was passed during a handshake, you can log the distinguished name of that client certificate using the environment variable percent bracket SSL underscore client underscore DN bracket E. And again, here's an example on what it would look like in the access log. Again, very great to know how to do this, and I highly recommend using it on a regular basis whenever you debug these type of problems. I think you'll find that it is very useful. Slide number 29. If you want to have a complete list, obviously I'm not going to, I don't have the available space here to record all of the environment variables that you can use, but I did want to provide you a link to where you can actually go and see every single SSL environment variable that we do provide and that you can use. So please review that at your leisure. Slide number 30. Okay, so what does a particular SSL message in the web service error log mean? This, I have a little problems with this when I came to creating the presentation, because whenever we're dealing with SSL issues or errors that we see in the log, there's a lot of different ones that can arise, and I was like, well, which one should we focus on? Which one should I try to go over in a presentation? And I found that it's virtually impossible to really cover successfully in this amount of time. So instead, what I wanted to do was actually break it down to kind of give you guidance on how to, on what to look at. If, you know, for configuration, for example, there are specific configuration messages that you'll see in the error log that are specific to the SSL configuration itself. There are specific handshake messages that relates to problems during, relates to problems that actually occur when the handshake's taking place between the client and the web server. There also are specific I/O error messages that are recorded during reading and writing of data between the plugin and the app server. Not necessarily a handshake problem, but actually after the handshake takes place and the data is actually coming across the encrypted connection, you might see some problems with the I/O. So it's important to break that down. And then there's SSL initialization messages, which get recorded during server startup and during the very beginning of the initialization of the protocol. And if we proceed on to slide number 31, I broke this down for you, specifically providing links. If you see a specific error message in your error log, and you want to know, you're not sure, is it a configuration problem? Is it a handshake problem? Is it an I/O problem? Or is it an SSL initialization problem? Each one of these links takes you to the specific section in the info center that identifies which message corresponds to whether or not it's a configuration, handshake, or I/O, or SSL initialization problem. Now, one thing I did want to point out here, you'll notice if you go to these links that some of the, it'll record, here's the error message, and then it records, what to do to solve it.
And some of them simply say to call service. And obviously, it's not very helpful from a customer perspective. The reason why it says that in that particular case is usually because, one is it's a very rare message. You don't see it very often. And the other reason that it tells you to call support is usually to identify the root cause of the problem does require development involvement, as well as just get tracing. And obviously, as we talked about earlier, just get tracing is not something that Level 2 can really review, and it's not something that a customer can review. So that is why when you look at some of the messages, the description of how to solve it is not very clear, and I apologize for that. But the ones that do specifically tell you how to resolve, those are common problems that you'll see, and the suggestions on how to solve those are usually pretty clear, and they're usually pretty simple. For example, you might see an SSL initialization failure. It says bad, you know, failed to initialize key database file. And, you know, obviously the solution is to check the key file, check the password, make sure the STH file is created, et cetera. So usually if there is a suggestion to try and it's clearly documented, it's usually a common error that you'll see. And the suggestion is usually pretty doggone accurate, I should say, and you can resolve it yourself. And these links will help you get to the right spot on how to resolve those. So anyway, let's proceed on to slide number 32. Okay, so what does a particular SSL message in the HTTP plugin log mean? And the plugin log SSL error messages are not as wide. You won't see as many. There's really only a few that we deal with, so it was easy for me to put them in here. For example, you'll see if you see a failed in RF just get secure socket init, which is a pretty common error message that you'll see whenever the handshake fails between the plugin and the application server. That particular error message, the link here will take you directly to the DCF tech note that tells you how to resolve it. So it's a great piece of information to have. The other common just get error that you'll see in the plugin log whenever there's a handshake failure between the plugin and the application server is an error bad key file password. Again, this link will take you to the tech note that tells you how to resolve that. You should be okay as far as figuring that out. If you don't, obviously you can open a PMR, and we can help you further in technical support. Proceed on to slide number 33. Okay, so how can I confirm what certificate is being used? I apologize for the bad characters here. If you have access to the PDF file, you'll actually see what these characters were supposed to look like. But there are two simple ways to confirm what certificate is actually being used. We talked previously about setting the environment variable. If you want to know what server certificate was actually passed to a client, you can use the environment variable %SSL_server_CN(E). And that will actually record for every single get and post in the access log on what server certificate was actually passed to the client browser. Or if you want to, once the handshake takes place and you want to look at it from a browser perspective, I've outlined here, obviously the characters are screwed up in this webcast, but I outlined for each browser specifically where you can go to see what certificate was passed. What you would want to focus on under the view is the issued to. The issued to will show you exactly the certificate that was passed. It'll indicate the site name of the server certificate, the distinguished name of the server certificate that was passed during that actual handshake. So if we could proceed on to slide number 34. Okay, to see what certificate is being passed from WebSphere to the HTTP plugin requires that you bypass the plugin. Unfortunately, the plugin right now does not record the server certificate that was passed. If the handshake fails, it'll simply record that bad cert message that we talked about previously, but it won't actually tell you the common name or the distinguished name of the certificate. We are working with IBM Development to try to have them change the code so that we'll actually start recording that information in the plug and log, but as of right now, it doesn't record that. So a quick and dirty way to do it, tricky way to do it, is you can bypass the web server by accessing the WebSphere transport over SSL directly by putting in https://, the hostname, :9443, / in this example, WPA/portal. When you do that, the actual handshake will be presented to the browser. If the handshake is not recognized by the browser as a trusted cert, you'll get a pop-up, as we talked about in the previous session. When you use self-signed certificates, you'll get a pop-up because the browser doesn't recognize the issuer as trusted, so it'll throw the pop-up warning you. The plugin, unfortunately, when the cert's passed from WebSphere directly to the plugin, if the plugin doesn't recognize the or doesn't trust the signer of the certificate, it doesn't have the ability to prompt you, so it'll simply fail the handshake and record that bad cert message in the plugin log. Also, if the certificate's expired, if WebSphere is passing a certificate that's expired and the plugin can therefore not trust it, it'll actually fail the handshake and record a bad cert message instead of being able to throw a pop-up warning you. And that is why, in this case, to actually see the certificate, you would bypass the plugin by going directly to the WebSphere transport. And in this case, you would see the pop-up, and you can then look at the details of the certificate to see which one was passed. And you can also, from the browser, look at these view options to see the issue 2 of the actual certificate that was passed. So just a quick trick, whenever you're dealing with certificate problems, you see the bad cert message in the plugin log, but you're not sure what cert was actually passed, you can bypass the plugin and actually see it. So anyway, if we could proceed on to slide number 35. Additional information that we didn't cover today, just because we don't have time in an hour session here to actually talk about these things, but if you're dealing with SSL performance problems, here is a direct link to the IHS performance tuning document that talks specifically on some common problems when it deals to SSL performance, usually related to ciphers. Some ciphers are more performance intensive, if you will, and so this document talks about how to reorder the cipher list to help with performance, as well as if you're dealing with crashes, if you or hangs over SSL, if you have a problem where you're actually trying to, you know, request an HTTPS or make an HTTPS request and it doesn't necessarily fail right away due to a configuration problem, but the server actually crashes, or you get a hang, then this document here will take you to the IHS Diag information on how you can debug that. So definitely wanted to provide that to you so that you'll have the available resource to debug that. So anyway, if we could proceed on to slide number 36. Additional WebSphere product resources, similar to the previous sessions. You can discover latest trends in WebSphere technology by going to this link. You can learn more about upcoming webcasts using the link located here. Information on user group community. If you want to see some demos, see some flash replays, step-by-step instructions for using electronic services via ESAR, electronic service requests, as well as sign up for weekly technical support emails, you can visit these links here. And with that, I am wrapped up for today. I hope this was useful. Again, if you bookmark the PDF and you have it, SSL-related problems in the web server, I try to use this presentation as a means to provide you all of the links that you would need, as well as techniques, what to check first, things like that. So hopefully it'll be useful to you. Worst case, if you still can't resolve the problem, we are here in support to help you. I'm currently working on the team, and I usually am very active in assisting with PMRs as well as working PMRs directly. So I can certainly help you with SSL-related problems that you have. So anyway, I'm going to turn it back over to Elijah at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert, for a great presentation.
We'll go first to Eli Adler.
Yeah, hi, this is Eli from IBM. I guess I want a little bit of direction here. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep.
Okay, let's suppose the customer comes in with an SSL problem, but they're running something other than IBM HTTP server, like maybe Windows IIS or something like that.
Okay.
What directions would you give us in terms of debugging and stuff like that? Is everything the same or?
Well, okay. Here's the best answer I can give as far as that's concerned. If it's an IIS web server or any other web server, you still want to keep in mind that there are two handshakes that take place. You have the handshake between the client and the web server, and the handshake between the client and the web server is going to be dependent on the actual configuration of IIS itself. The second handshake that takes place is between the plugin and the application server. So if there is a failure trying to make a request for a WebSphere resource and you're using IIS and the handshake fails, first thing you want to do is disable the plugin. If you can, disable the plugin and see if you can serve any static pages within IIS over SSL. If you can't serve any static pages over SSL within IIS, then more than likely the problem is with the SSL configuration of the web server itself, and at that point you'd want to contact Microsoft. However, if the SSL handshake is successful between the client and IIS, meaning you can serve static pages on that web server, but you can't serve any dynamic requests over SSL, then more than likely the problem is within the plugin. And that is something that you would enable plugin tracing, as we talked about, and then you would review the plugin log for the common just get messages that I talked about. Usually most handshake failures that occur between the plugin and the app server are a result of the plugin not trusting the certificate that was presented. And so you'll see that bad cert message in the actual plugin log, and there is that link that I provided will show you how to debug that further and what to check, et cetera. As far as handshake problems are concerned, using IIS, if it's an IIS problem, you'd want to contact Microsoft, but if it's a plugin problem, then the techniques for debugging the plugin are the same, and that's something that we could look at as well here in support. Does that answer your question?
Right. Thank you. Great.
Yeah.
We'll go next to Rob O'Connor.
Hi. I had a question regarding the handshake between IHS and WAS. I was wondering what you'd recommend if the JVM port wasn't exposed.
Now, when you say the JVM port isn't exposed, meaning like you have a firewall, et cetera?
Correct.
Okay. Well, the best answer I can give for that is if you have a firewall between your plugin and your application server, the plugin obviously has access through that firewall. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to get to WebSphere at all. So if it's possible, if you can bring up a browser on the web server box or bring up a browser on the internal network, the same network where the web server resides, and try to get to the application server port that way. If you can't do that, it's a little difficult. You really, at that point, would have to rely on just get tracing as well as plugin tracing.
Okay, so basically, we'd either have to get some form of supporting, say, Unix systems. We'd have to go for some form of X Windows browser, or we'd have to go down the route of the tracing.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
move next to Dan Umshed.
Yes, hi, Robert. This is Dan Umshed from AT&T. I'm not sure if you covered this yesterday. I was unable to attend, but I was wondering if you have any tuning references for the SID process on the IHS web server. When you enable SSL, the SID process is a daemon process that I understand does caching of SSL handshakes, reduces the overhead for those. Did you discuss the SID process at all in any of these presentations?
In the previous presentation, I didn't go into detail. In the previous presentation, I did provide a link on information related to the SID daemon. The SID daemon is something that is started by default. You can specifically change the path to where you want the cache to be held. We didn't talk about that because normally you wouldn't change that, but there are directives to do that. And I did provide the links to where you can find that information in the previous presentation. As far as the settings, usually the defaults is what we recommend for SSL v2. It would be 100, and for SSL v3, it would be 1,000. Is usually the recommended setting for that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
We'll move next to Rick Zeller.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, a couple things. One is the gentleman earlier who asked about how you connect to the firewall issues. SSH can be your friend, and you can do some sort of port forwarding that will allow you to test it from your IE browser. So in other words, you don't necessarily have to be able to You can port forward through that machine just long enough to test it. The machine that's the AIX box or whatever machine is in the middle that has the IHS server running on it. That way you can test it with your browser from your PC laptop. SSH, I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but anyway, that can help you debug that, trying to answer his question. My question in particular is about, is also somewhat related, but a little bit off the topic. On the server itself, the web server application server itself, I'm getting a particular warning message, and I was just curious if you could sort of steer me in the right direction there.
Okay, I can try. What's the message?
Specific message is basically a W key store warning. One or more key stores are using the default password.
Okay, well, the default password is WebAS. Is it not allowing the handshake to go through?
No, it's allowing it, I think, but it's just giving me that warning, and I don't want to have that warning. So, I mean, it's okay if you don't have the answer. I know it's a little off scope or whatever, but...
Well, the default password for the key files that get generated is WebAS, and so if it's reporting that message, more than likely it's using the default password that was created for that key. And so what you would want to do to resolve it is you could bring up the IBM Key Management Utility within WebSphere on the WebSphere box and actually open up your JKS key stores and change the password. And so when you open up those JKS key stores, it's going to ask you for a password,
right?
And you would put in WebAS because that is the default, and it's WebAS with a capital W, lowercase E B, capital A S.
Capital W, and then the A S is capital also.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that helps.
Okay, and then you can bring that up, and then once it's open, you can change the password.
It might just be a matter of changing my key store to use a different one.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah. But that's, I mean, just on the message alone, that's the direction I would check first. And
so that's a good help. Thanks a lot.
Okay,
thanks
yeah.
for the presentation.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment today, that is star 1. We'll go next to David Lowe.
Hi, Robert. Dave Lowe here from AT&T. A lot of times you have a system that has multiple GISKit version, And usually, as far as cleaning them up, it's almost impossible because it really doesn't allow you to remove the other one while you're uninstalling the previous version of IHS or whatever the case might be here. So if you have the most current, how do you know you're using the right version of GISKit if you have multiple versions running?
Well, by default, GISKit is installed in a default path. It's not a path that you can change, right? Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So the IBM HTTP server that gets installed, the SSL module has the built-in logic to know which GISKit it should be looking for.
Oh, I see. So if you run the IKEYMAN off a specific version of IHS, it will know which GISKit to go to.
Correct.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Yep.
And as a final reminder to ask a question today, that is *1 on your telephone keypad. We'll go next to Elliot Kreider.
Well, I just had a quick question. As far as the key database file, if you create that in a specific GISKit version, what's the support for that key database file on forward and backward level GISKits?
Well, we don't guarantee backward compatibility. As far as forward compatibility, it really depends. If you create a key database file using GSK5, you shouldn't have any problems using it with GSK7. GSK4 is a little different. The best answer I can give is to, if you have an older key file, the general rule of thumb is you should be able to open it in a later GISKit. And if you don't, if you're not able to, then it probably would require a support ticket so that we could help figure out why.
Okay. It's just an issue when a customer buys a 2-year cert and then upgrades their whole software stack.
Right. It should work.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we'll go next to Stephen Ma.
Hi. Thanks for the presentation. I have two questions. First one is browsed from WebSphere 6.1 admin console. I found a lot of key management function has been embedded. So is this one replace the IKEYMAN?
Well, the answer to that is yes and no. The built-in key management that you see in 6.1 is really there for creating JKS key stores and managing the certificates within WebSphere. The IBM HTTP server, which we talked about today, which is the front end to WebSphere, still provides its own key management utility that gets installed with IHS 6.1. And we still recommend using that utility to create your KDB files and use the WebSphere side built-in functionality to create your JKS key stores.
Okay, thanks. Another question is I found a lot of P12 key files in WebSphere 6.1. Can you shed some light on it?
Right. I'm sorry. Yes, and I'm sorry. I'm up. The code changes a lot for me, too. In 6.1, we use P12 instead of the JKS. I apologize for that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
And it appears there are no further questions at this time.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Robert, for presenting today.